When I was a young man in school, high school, I did not like history. History was boring, it was dull, it was studying about people that lived a long time ago and didn't really have any bearing on us. But then, as I went through the book of Ecclesiastes, and I saw that quote by a man named Santayana, who said, those who refuse to learn the histories, to learn the lessons from history, are doomed or destined to repeat them. Or as the scripture puts it in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, that which has been is that which shall be. So a lot of times when we're looking into the past, we're seeing the future. A lot of times when we're looking at the past and the circumstances that arose and developed as a result of this decision or that decision, well, that's going to happen again. And what we want to talk about this evening is an especially interesting situation along those lines. Because fortunately for us, in the New Testament, God points out to us, here's the important history that I want you to remember. And one of those points is when the children of Israel left Egypt. Twice in the New Testament, we are directed toward that event and warned that these things were written for our learning, for our admonition, for our example. And therefore, it's very important, brethren, that we understand this history. And that we learn from this history, because this is not their history, it's our future. This is not what happened to them exclusively, but what ultimately will happen to us. And so as we look at Moses, we look at Joshua and Caleb, we look at the children of Israel, and we try to understand what happened. How could 600,000 men leave Egypt and only two finally enter into the promised land? And if you draw the conclusion, well, I guess God just isn't strong enough, that's not the right answer. The problem was in the self-image of the people who left Egypt and the self-image of Joshua, Caleb, Moses, and of course, his family. So as we look at this, it's actually very interesting. Because God had already told them. We don't know how much of the book of Genesis was written down before Moses wrote it. We back then, it's just very difficult to know. What exactly happened? How was the Bible written? We're told that Moses wrote the book of Genesis, but that's just secular history. There's nothing in the scriptures that tells us that Moses wrote the book of Genesis. But the things recorded in the book of Genesis ultimately were compiled by Moses into a book we call Genesis, which covers a history of what? 5, 6, maybe more thousands of years. And so, the children of Israel knew this. This is the father of their country. We know George Washington. We understand the thinking of the framer or the founding fathers and what they were trying to accomplish. And if we don't, we're very foolish because there's a lot to be learned about what they've done and about the power of the country that they put together. Well, in this case, God told Abraham, your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs and will serve them and they will afflict them for 400 years. So God is very clear. The children of Israel will go into Egypt and they will become slaves in Egypt and they will be treated very poorly in Egypt. Now, God told this to Abraham long before Isaac was even born. And so that was something they understood. But he also said, in the fourth generation, though, they shall return here. Now, I think it's pretty evident that Moses' mother and father taught this to Moses. Moses knew that he had a choice whether to choose ill treatment with the people of God. Well, how would he know about ill treatment? Well, God talked about ill treatment. How would he know that he has a choice? Well, because God revealed this. In the fourth generation, they shall return. Now, Moses has a brain. He can add it all up. He knows that we're here. We're here. It's time. You know, when it says that Moses thought the children of Israel would understand that he was going to deliver them and bring them back to the promised land? Where did he get that information? From the scriptures. And as Stephen pointed out, the children of Israel, they didn't know what he was talking about. God had told Abraham,
no longer
shall your name be Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you and their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your descendants forever. Now this is the legacy of Israel. It's our legacy. We are now the children of Abraham. And everything in the Old Testament, that's my history and your history. I'm not an American. Well, I am, but not primarily. I see myself as a child of Abraham, like Isaac. That's what Paul said in Galatians chapter 4. We, like Isaac, are children of promise. I'm a child of promise. You're a child of promise. This is our history. And so God has a vision for his people, but the world also has a vision for his people. Moses chose God's vision. The children of Israel, sadly, were accepting the label that the world, or in that day and age, the Egyptians had put upon them, that that was the best they could be as slaves. And the children of Israel bought into that. And we'll see a little bit later in the lesson, over and over again, the children of Israel saying to Moses, we were better off as slaves in Egypt. We want to go back and be slaves in Egypt. We don't want this freedom that you have brought us because of the adversities. They could not see themselves in a clear way. So Israel clearly had two visions. The one revealed by God is absolute truth, and the illusion created by Pharaoh. Now we have the same problem today. We have the vision of the scriptures, of what a Christian is, of what the hope of the Christian is, of what the value of the Christian is to God. We also have a vision from the world of what Christianity is. And we have to decide whose vision will be our vision. Will we, by faith, see ourselves as God reveals? Or, like those in Israel at the time of Moses, will we allow the world to define us? Will we allow the world to minimize us? Will we allow the world to make us feel like we're grasshoppers, like they felt? Joseph's last words confirmed, and there's his bones. I mean, they had to know Moses or Joseph's bones. Joseph was a famous man in Egypt. And the children of Israel had to know about this. Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. Now that was God's testimony, and the children of Israel had to know it. But the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with vigor. They made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve with rigor. So Joseph, you're going to leave here and you're going to take my bones with you and you're going back to Canaan and you're going to be a great nation. And Abraham is going to be your father, and kings are going to come from you, and all kinds of wonderful things are going to happen. And Pharaoh says, no. No, you're just slaves. You are slaves, and you need to stay here and be slaves. Now, you'd think that's a pretty stark choice. You would think that if you had the choice or the right to leave with Moses and become God's people, or go back to being a slave in Egypt, what would you do? Well, I guess it would depend on your faith. These people didn't have any faith. This was the paradox that Israel was facing when Moses was born. And it's fascinating how this unfolds. So let's take a look at this and try to grapple with it a little bit. Moses was born a slave in the eyes of Egypt and made a prince in the eyes of Egypt. But in the eyes of God, Moses was born in Israel as one of his chosen people and was taken and made a slave in Egypt. So it just how you want to look at this. Was Moses the prince when he was in Egypt? Or was he the slave when he was in Egypt?
Was Moses the prince when he forsook Egypt to come suffer ill treatment with the people of God? Well, that's the interesting question. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Well, the son of Pharaoh's daughter, as Stephen points out in Acts chapter 7, was mighty in words and in deeds. He was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Moses was a tremendously powerful, worldly man in Egypt. And I don't mean more worldly in the sense of immoral. I don't know what his spiritual and moral life was like. But in Pharaoh's home, he was considered powerful, but only from a worldly perspective. And Moses didn't want that. Now, again, it's fascinating to think about this. How did Moses learn all of this? He was raised in Egypt. He had all the wisdom of Egypt. But his mama had him until he was weaned. And on mama's knee, he learned the history of his people. He learned about Abraham. He learned about Joseph. He learned about the people of God. He learned about the affliction of the people of God. He learned about what God told Moses or God told Abraham. And he didn't forget it. And when the opportunity came, look at the choice. Look at how stark the choice is here. And you and I, we've all made the same choice at some point in our life, some in our teens, some a little later. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. What reward? Well, the reward that is outlined in Hebrews chapter 11, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having greeted them and embraced them and confessed, we are strangers and pilgrims on the earth. That story went down through the history of God's people. And some were captivated by it and did what Moses did, and others were not. And now here we are, having to make the same choice. So Moses was, in the Egyptians' eyes, born a slave, had the Egyptian colors, the Egyptian blanket. When Pharaoh's daughter saw that blanket, she said, this is one of the Hebrew children. This is a slave. And she took him into her home, thinking to make him into something great. But God had other plans, and Moses did too. So, as I said earlier, Moses had what I would call double vision. In other words, he had to really shake his head and try to think this thing through. He was a prince in Egypt, but he was a prince in Israel. He was a slave in Egypt, but he was a slave in Israel. What choices would he make? He's faced with that choice. And it says, when he came of age, Stephen said at the age of 40, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He made a decision one day. Now, we know what motivated it. He saw an Egyptian beating or smiting or putting to death a Hebrew, and he stopped it. And he saved the Hebrew and killed the Egyptian, thinking, we're going back to Israel now. We're going back to the land of Canaan. Well, the children of Israel weren't ready, but God was. But God needed to craft and clean and make his servant ready for the work that he was going to have to do. So from Pharaoh's daughter, Egypt is king, but from Israel, his mother, the sons of Abraham will ultimately be the kings. The sons of Abraham will ultimately be the ones who will conquer. And so I'm often reminded as I read this, and I really like this story. I read it as a young man, and I've read through it a few times since then. But it's a story, I think most of you have heard of it, maybe some of you have read it. It's called The Prince and the Pauper. It was written by Mark Twain about 100 and some odd years ago. And it's a story of two boys born on the same day. Pretty far-fetched story, but when we compare it to Moses, it's kind of interesting how the truth rings out from that. So these two boys look nearly identical. One is raised in the palace by the king. He's the king's son. He is treated like a king by his father. He is preparing to become the king of England. And he sees himself as a prince. The other boy, who looks almost exactly like him, was raised by a peasant in the harsh, rigorous world of 1600 England. Beaten, mistreated, his father an alcoholic, terrible, terrible upbringing. But these two young boys have an opportunity to visit with each other, and they decide we're going to change places. The prince is going to go out into the world and act like a pauper, and the pauper is going to go into the king's palace and act like a king. That's exactly what happened to Moses. You remember in Ecclesiastes when Solomon says, I have seen princes walking as servants, and I've seen servants riding on horses. That may be where Mark Twain got that thought thinking from, because that happens all the time. Somebody who has royal blood is actually just a slave. Acts like a slave, looks like a slave, walks like a slave. He's got the trappings of a prince, but he's not a prince. And then here's the servant, the slave, that's walking beside him. He's the prince. He has all the trappings of a prince, but nobody can see it except God. Well, that's the situation. So as the story unfolds, the prince goes out into the world wearing pauper's clothing, treated like a pauper, treated like a nobody and a nothing, and yet he never allowed his treatment to affect his self-image. He knew he was king. And he didn't care what those people said. He didn't care how those people acted. He didn't care what they did to him. He was going to be king. Now, the opposite problem, the pauper was being treated as a king, and he didn't feel he wasn't worthy. I'm not worthy to be a king. But he was being treated like a king. And it was very uncomfortable. And no matter what they did, he knew he wasn't a king. Now, I want you to keep this in the back of your mind, because that's exactly what happened to Israel. Israel was always a pauper. They were always a peasant. God said, you have royal blood. You will be my people. Israel could never accept that, no matter what God said to them, no matter how God worked with them. They felt like a peasant, a servant. They were not servants. They were God's chosen people. But they could not see it. As the Hebrew writer put it, that was not united by faith. They couldn't see it. They felt unworthy. And so the story proceeds. And again, this is exactly. Moses chose to see himself like the prince because that's how God defined him. God called Abraham out of Ur and said, if you come to this land, I will make you a great nation. And through your seed, all nations of the earth will be blessed. And then, of course, as that promise got closer and closer and more vivid, and Moses knew that. Now, why the children of Israel didn't know that, as I said, if you don't study history, then you can get caught up in the same thing. And, of course, I think you see where I'm going in this lesson. We are still being defined by the world, and we are also defined by God. And we have to choose our perspective. Am I going to be a prince? As God says, kingdom of priests, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, is that what I am? Or am I worthy of the persecution that I am treated with because what I ask other people to do really isn't fair? And so some people in the Church of Christ feel like grasshoppers, they feel like slaves, they feel like paupers because the doctrines and the teachings, they haven't grasped that they came from God, that these are God's teachings and God's doctrines, and if we follow them, ultimately, when the Lord returns, we will shine with the glory of our Father forever and ever, and all those people who treated us like slaves are going to see. But it takes vision. It takes the decision of deciding who we actually are. Well, Israel chose to see themselves like slaves. That's not how God defined them. It's how Egypt defined them. But they accepted Egypt's definition. It's just a terrible tragedy that they did that. So at 40, Moses is both a prince and a pauper. He's a pauper in the eyes of God right now because as long as he's in Pharaoh's house, He's not useful to him. But he's a prince in the eyes of Pharaoh. But he has to make a decision. Am I going to be God's prince or Pharaoh's prince? And he made the decision, as we saw a minute ago. I'm going to put it up here again. I'm not going to read it again. But this is what happened. He reached an age, just like you and I. We reached an age where we made a decision. I hate, like Paul said, oh, wretched man that I am. What I do, I hate. What I want to do, I don't do. Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me? And then here comes Jesus and says, come unto me, all you who labor heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. And so we came to the light. And the light defines our walk as a Christian. And we have to decide, does that make me a prince or a pauper? In the world's eyes, it makes me a pauper. In the Lord's eyes, it makes me a prince. Who will define me? Israel could never see themselves as anything but slaves. It's just so sad. God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near, for God said, lest perhaps the people change their mind when they see war and return to Egypt. Even God knew. You remember that passage in 1 Corinthians 13 that said, or chapter 10, I'm sorry, verse 13 that says, God will never tempt you above what you're able to bear? That's what he's talking about. He did not lead them by the way of the land of Philistine. He could have just shot them right over to... If you look at a map, you see the delta of Israel, which is where the Nile opens up. And so you've got this V, and they're way up here, and Israel's right over here. And God sends them around, all the way around to Mount Sinai and back up. And it says right here, God did not lead them by the land of the Philistines. That would have been a straight shot. Because he said, these people aren't ready. They have not yet accepted what I told Abraham. I can't take them because the slightest problem is going to lead them to want to come back and be slaves in Egypt. Even God could see that. But when they get to the Red Sea, even though God's done all this to them, here's what they say. Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Wouldn't you rather die free as a child of God in Israel in the wilderness than to go back and be a slave in Egypt? That's how convoluted sin is. But you see this in the drug addict. You see this in the alcoholic. You see this in the person who is enslaved to sin. They just keep getting drugged back because they won't see themselves clearly and they can't get out of it. Israel never made Moses' choice. Moses chose to suffer ill treatment with the people of God. Israel, every time they had to suffer, said, we want to go back and be slaves. So here's what they said. Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. What a blasphemous thing. Think about what they said there. Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord. You know, when that tenth plague came, we wish we hadn't put the blood on the doorpost and the lintels. We wish we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. Can you see why God would be so angry with them? But you can see the same thing today. There's people in the church who talk about, oh, how much better it was before I became a Christian, or how much better it would be if we just take on some of the teachings of the denominations. And so what we're dealing with today, that which has been is that which shall be. If those who refuse to learn from history, you're going to repeat it. The problem, brethren, is simple. There are two visions competing, and we take one or the other, depending on our faith and our commitment and our understanding. When thirsty, they said, why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? Is that what God had in mind? Think about it. Why would they say something like this? Is this God brought you out of Egypt with the 10 plagues? He opened the Red Sea, and now what are you complaining about? Are you bringing us out here to kill us? Soon after leaving Mount Sinai, you have wept in the hearing of the Lord and said, who will give us meat to eat? for it was well with us in Egypt. We liked it better when we were slaves in Egypt. I don't understand this thinking. You don't either. I'm sure none of you here can read this and think to your, and think in your mind, how could these people say these things to God and to his lawgiver, Moses, who saw himself as the servant that God wanted him to be? Well, it didn't end there. In chapter 13, it says this: we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. They never let God define who they were. Have we? Are we letting God define? Are you proud? Do you get all your self-esteem? I'm a member of the Church of Christ. And I'm about as proud of that as I could be. I could just bust all my buttons. I am so proud to be a member of the Church of Christ. Now, there's other people out there, hopefully no one here, who are a little bit ashamed. What church do you go to?
Church of Christ.
What? Oh, we're members of that Church of Christ. Oh, you go to that place that doesn't believe in music. You go to that place that doesn't take care of any of the needy. You go to that place that is so out of step with everybody else. Well, yeah, I do. But I don't think that. I say to myself and I say to them, you know, I'm just doing what God told us to do. If you don't like it, you can take it up with God. God said that we should be what we are. In 14 it says this: all the children of Israel and the whole congregation, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness, would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. And it was at this moment that God swore in his wrath, you will never enter my rest. We are done. I have done everything I can for you. And here you are acting like a slave. You are my people. Do you remember how many times God told Moses, look, let's just kill all of them and I'll start over with you. I'll make of you a great nation. And he would have done it. He could have done it. It wouldn't have been a problem. Moses interceded. But the point that I'm trying to bring out here with the prince and the pauper and with Moses and the children of Israel is that there are two competing visions of who we are. The one that God has proclaimed and that we accept by faith, or the one that the world has devised to cause us to be ashamed. It's interesting to me, they felt safer going back to Egypt's slavery than to move forward as the servants of God. I cannot understand that thinking, and I'm glad I can't. And I hope you can't either. I hope that all of us here this evening, we understand that we have a legacy. It goes all the way back to Abraham. And yeah, there's some pretty big chasms in the history of Israel where they aren't exactly the people we could be proud of, but it's not because of God, it's because of their rebellion. But the ones in Hebrews 11 and the ones that are recorded throughout the history of God's people in and including Genesis to Malachi, those are my brothers and sisters. Those are my mothers and fathers. And I relate to them, whether it be Elijah or Jeremiah, whether it be Jonah. You say, well, how could you relate to Jonah? Well, I've seen some situations where I can see how Jonah would have felt the way he did. I may not have made the same decision as he did, but God put him in there. He's a great example of what? Of God's mercy and compassion and long-suffering, which sometimes I need, because we all make situations that arise where we think to ourselves, how could God love a servant like me? Well, I can go back and look at Samson, and I can look at Jephthah, and I can look at Jonah. Well, what's the point? The point is that we have to make a decision about this double vision. In school, those of you who are students in school, you are not going to be treated like kings. You're going to be treated like paupers. And you have to make a decision. Am I going to let my peers define me? Or am I going to let God define me? And that's a decision. You have to make the same decision Moses made. Moses made the decision to suffer ill treatment with the people of God. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm saying that that which has been and that is that which shall be. Those people made that choice, and now for thousands of years, they regret it. I'm not going to let that happen to me, and if I can help it, I'm not going to let that happen to any of us. The world sees, Jesus sees. We face the prince and the pauper day by day, just like Moses and just like Israel. Now, Moses made his decision. Joshua and Caleb made their decision. Children of Israel, they made their decision too. So, we have to decide. There's two competing visions. You see it with Lot? We see in Peter, God defines Moses as a righteous man he delivered. But the people of Sodom defined Lot as a meddler, as a judge, as a harsh person who needed to be destroyed. Well, Lot didn't accept their vision. Noah didn't accept their vision. Abraham didn't accept their vision. Moses didn't either. And we have to make that decision ourselves. Now, there's some double vision at Corinth. I think that God has displayed us, the apostles, last of all, as men condemned to death, for we have been made a spectacle to the world, both to angels and to men. We are fools for Christ's sake. But because of their compromises, the Corinthians were wise. Of course, God, he tells them just right after this, if you think you're wise, you better go back and make sure that what you're calling wisdom is wisdom. We are weak because we've chosen to completely give ourselves to the Lord. But you are strong. You are distinguished because of your little modifications, just like people in the denominations today. You can become distinguished if you just change your view on abortion, if you just change your view on evolution, if you just change your view on homosexuality. You can become a very important person in the world. And that's what they had done. But the apostles couldn't do any of that. We're dishonored. To this present hour, we hunger and thirst and are poorly clothed and broken and beaten and homeless. Sounds like a pauper, doesn't it? And yet, God doesn't see them that way. Verse 12, we labor, working with our hands, being reviled, we bless, being persecuted, we endure, being defamed, we entreat. We have been made as the filth of the world and the offscouring of all things until now. And Paul is urging the Corinthians to come over to their side. Because Paul understands, just like Moses understood, it's better to suffer ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. It is better to be a peer with God than it is to be a peer with a lost and dying world. And so they had the same problem in Corinth. We see the same problems today. But the apostles saw themselves as more than conquerors. The world defined them, but they refused that definition. Now, of course, they had miracles, they had Jesus, they had the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. They had lots of good reasons for holding on to that, but we do too. It's all in the scriptures now. Will God or the world define how we see ourselves? As I said, we can be a prince or we can be a pauper. And we are. Either in the world or in the church. I'd rather be a prince in the church and a pauper in the world than to be a prince in the world and a pauper in the church. But that's the choice we all have to make. If we're going to stand with the Lord and throw our lot within his people, then we're going to have this affliction. But how does Paul see it? I mean, after writing what he did in 1 Corinthians, and he said some stronger things in 2 Corinthians about how brutal it was to be an apostle and to be a Christian in the first century. But he says here, our light affliction, which is but for the moment, works for us a more and more exceedingly eternal weight of glory. Well, we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal or temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So I get to choose, and you get to choose, just like Israel did, And just like every man and every woman, from the beginning until the end, we have to make a choice whether God will define us, and we will stand with God and put forth our love and devotion and praise and self-image based on what He says, and forget about what the world says. So Jesus says, blessed are those who are persecuted. Well, the world doesn't say blessed are those who are persecuted. The world says those of you who are persecuted are cursed. And they are. But Jesus says, no, they look cursed. They look like paupers. But I'm going to tell you right now, they are the cream of the cream in the eyes of God. That's what the word blessed here means. It means someone who has done something worthy of honor and glory and magnificence. Those who are persecuted. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely. They're defining. They're trying to define us. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. You think that's easy? That's not easy. It's faith. If I believe what God says about me and Jesus says about me and I'm persecuted for believing that, then I'm the true prince. I'm the true son of God. I'm the true servant that God wants me to be. I would have been Moses in that generation, or I would have been Joshua and Caleb. But if I'm on the fence, wishy-washy, then that's a whole different situation. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets. Once again, that which has been is what will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. And if we refuse to learn the lessons of history, we are doomed to repeat them. If persecution causes us to see ourselves, allows our self-image to be impacted, then we're too much like those people in Egypt. Blessed are you when men hate you. You know, that was such a difficult thing for me to learn. I still struggle with it. From the time of my youth, I've always determined that if people appreciate and thank me for what I'm doing, it's good. And if people mistreat me or don't treat me the way that I want to be treated, then I did something wrong. But you know, that all goes out the window when you become a Christian. When you become a Christian, the things that God would praise you for, and does in the scriptures, the world hates. So when men hate you, now again, not because you did something bad to them, not because of the normal ebb and flow where people hate you because you do bad things and people love you when you do good things. But in this case, things are turned upside down. It's the prince and the pauper. He looks like a pauper, but he's really a prince. Just like Solomon said, that guy standing on the ground looks like the servant, but he's really the prince. And so those in the church are really the princes, but how does the world see them? They exclude you. They revile you. They cast out your name as evil. Rejoice in that day. Boy, that's easy, isn't it? It's so easy to rejoice when you go to school and the kids are treating you badly, or you go to work and the people at work are treating you badly, or you move into a neighborhood and they find out you're a Christian and what you stand for, and suddenly... Rejoice in that day and leap for joy. Again, it's a self-image issue. It's whether or not I can see myself as I really am. So, these are the things that God has revealed about us. We're just about done with the lesson here. I just want to quickly talk about these things. God says the world's not worthy of people like you. God says we're an elect race, which means chosen, special, precious. We are a royal priesthood, a holy nation. So was Israel. We have the hope, the glory, the power. God is for us. Our citizenship is in heaven. We are the children of God. But do we see ourselves that way? Who's defining us? When we're out in the world, we can be a prince among the paupers, or we can feel like a pauper among the princes. That's what Moses had to deal with. That's what the children of Israel had to deal with. And that's what we're dealing with. So the choice really is ours. We can see God working through us, or we can see ourselves as the world wants to define us. Moses chose to see God working through him, and he did. Israel chose to be the slave that that they were,
and that's how they died. They died as slaves in the wilderness.
And so these things are written for our admonition, and we need to make some decisions on what we're going to do. So as we conclude our lesson this evening, history, it can be dry, it can be dull, it can be boring, or it can be exciting and thrilling and revealing and strengthening. It just depends on our perspective. We can learn a lot from that Prince and the Pauper, although that's a fictional story. It very clearly portrays and depicts what God tried to do with Moses and Egypt and Israel, and we see how it all turned out. So how do we see ourselves? Are we still on the fence? One day I see myself as a Christian. One day I see myself in the world. One day I'm proud to be a Christian. The next day I'm ashamed to be a Christian. Am I still hot and cold and lukewarm and trying to make my decision? Or do I see myself like Moses? Do I put myself in Hebrews 11, that great cloud of witnesses? One of these days, I'd like to be one of them. And you would too. I'd like God to be able to put my story. You know, he's written a story. He's written the book, and it's there, and it's going to be read. The books are going to be opened, and the things that were done are going to be opened and read. And I want God to be able to read my story. And I want God to be able to say, well done. That's a choice we have. And so here, as we now prepare to sing number 480, it's interesting, I didn't know he was going to make that the song of invitation, but it fits pretty well, doesn't it? We're going to stand up like Joshua? Or are we going to be a grasshopper? Are we going to let the world define us? Or are we going to let God define us? Are we going to be that prince, or are we going to be that pauper? That's a decision, and we can make it. If we can help you in any way this evening, you'd like to become a Christian, or you'd like to confess your sins, or you would need the prayers of the congregation, we invite you to come. While we together stand and sing.